Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show, rolling through the Thursday edition of the program. And boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to dive into today with you. Murders skyrocketing across the country in 2020. We now know the full data as the FBI has released its report. Going to talk about that. The border continues to be a sieve. Many of the tens of thousands of people who have been coming across in Del Rio, Texas, are being released without any restraint. Dr. Fauci, we have a new email update as he prepares for the release of his new documentary, Fauci, but has previously told us that he is far too busy with his New York Times photo shoots to be able to do a 15-minute interview with us. Black Lives Matter is threatening to protest the vaccine mandates. Hunter Biden's artwork might sell for nearly $500,000. By the way, Politico has determined that the Hunter Biden laptop and the emails are real, which is great. A year after it was censored by Twitter, may need to get into that a little bit. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg quotes being changed to take out the word woman, which is kind of significant if you know anything about Ruth Bader Ginsburg's history. But we begin with the tally from the defund the police argument, which I believe is the single dumbest political argument that has existed in my lifetime, because we knew exactly what the cost was going to be, and still Democrats embraced it. I want to let you hear this data here, and then we're going to play you a montage of Democrats saying, hey, when we say defund the police, we mean it. The United States in 2020 experienced the, I'm reading from the New York Times, the United States in 2020 experienced the biggest rise in murder since the start of national record keeping in 1960. That's according to the FBI. The rise in murder was 29% in 2020. That's the largest we have ever seen, and over double the largest one-year rise we've ever seen before, which was a 12.7% increase in 1968. The data scheduled to be officially released in the near future here. But as we walk through all of this, I want to play for you Democrats arguing, when we say defund the police, we mean defund them, now that we know the full tally of death that this argument has entailed.
I am for defunding the police.
Yes, I support the defund movement.
Why use the word defund? Why use the word defund? And it's like, this is the word that's coming from the street. Many affluent suburbs have essentially already begun pursuing a defunding of the police, in that they fund schools.
Not only do we need to disinvest for in police, but we need to completely dismantle the Minneapolis Police Department. The Minneapolis Police Department is rotten to the root.
Defund the police does not mean abolish the police. It means a dramatic reduction in the number of police in our poor communities. Police are terrorizing black and brown communities. The evidence is clear across the country.
The idiotic theories of the left, Clay, come with consequences for people. And tragically, and at some level ironically, the voices that you're hearing here that are advocating for defunding, which they seem to mostly understand as the actual removal of funding for police, but then sometimes it means having more social workers or whatever it may be, resulted in, as you pointed out, data that shows unequivocally a biggest in 60 years leap in the murder rate in this country, which disproportionately affects black and brown communities in major cities, as we know. So that moment of national panic that was kicked off, as we know, because of the incident with George Floyd, where a police officer who has been found guilty of murder, as we know, and is looking or likely to spend decades in prison, that then resulted in riots all across the country. It resulted in politicians, including some Republicans, I might note, who all of a sudden were willing to throw police under the bus for the actions of really one police officer. And the end result was that a lot of people are dead who would not have been dead based on the statistics otherwise. Not just a stupid idea. Defund police is not just a dumb idea. It was a lethal idea, a murderous idea in the sense that it left people to the whims of the criminals in their societies, in their communities, and law enforcement was abandoned politically and in some cases financially. I mean, there was actual defunding. We should remind everybody. Austin, $100 million. New York pulled $1 billion out of the LAPD budget.
Tons.
Minneapolis pulled money out of the... They actually did do this. And there have been increases in the major cities in particular in law enforcement retiring and just morale being very, very low. Clay, you defund police, you get more crime. You don't let Border Patrol do their jobs, you get more illegal immigration. These are simple cause and effect situations, and we see the consequences of them. And it's disastrous for the country and for the Biden administration.
I think if you look at that data, again, a 29% increase in overall murders, the biggest ever, over double the biggest ever increase since the FBI started tracking this data back in 1960. There are thousands of people who are dead right now, Buck, that would otherwise have been alive if police had been able to do their job. And what's going to happen here is, first of all, you're going to see an immediate backpedaling. We've already seen this from people claiming that they never wanted to defund the police, that they never wanted to restrict the amount of dollars that were allocated to police, that they never wanted to change police's ability to do their job. There's going to be a backpedaling from this. There's going to be an attempt to pretend this was not real. We've already seen it begin. Can't allow it to happen. You need to hold politicians hold them to the consequence of their words with these actions. And also, we're going to see, I believe, a swing back in the other direction. And we're already starting to see it. Remember, Buck, the culture was so anti-cops that they pulled cops off of the television. They weren't allowed to the reality show.
They pulled the show cops off TV
because they decided it made cops look too positive in terms of their portrayal. They pulled the reality show cops off of television because of the anti-police sentiment. And we got tons of police officers who listen to us all over the country, and we don't need you to tell us, but we've taken these calls to verify it. They've never been more disrespected in their entire career of law enforcement. And when you pull back, we knew this was so frustrating about this is we knew the Ferguson effect was real. And effectively what we did was put the Ferguson effect in play in every place in the country in terms of police being able to do their job.
We knew it was real because this wasn't the first iteration of Black Lives Matter as a movement. BLM, as we all recall, started after Ferguson, Missouri, with Michael Brown during the Obama administration. And there was that timeless moment where you had a CNN reporter standing in front of a conflagration, a building fully on fire, saying this was a mostly peaceful protest. And I think we will never forget that image because it was the most CNN moment I think I've ever seen in my life. Narrative over the blazing inferno in front of your very eyes. But, Clay, the same thing happened. That's how Heather McDonald, and a credit to her for coming up with the notion of or doing the research to prove the Ferguson effect after the first time around. It's quite clear when you tell cops, hey, if there's an incident that's caught on video where it looks like you're being rough, maybe it doesn't show what happened even leading up to that moment. Maybe it's an edited video. We will not have your back as a district attorney. We will not politically support law enforcement doing what it has to do to keep communities safe from criminals. When you do that, all of a sudden that guy who, you know, is running away with a handbag down the alleyway, the cop says, I'm not going to chase him. What if I have to tackle him? What if it gets ugly? I'm going to risk my pension. I'm going to risk my freedom. And so cops say, fine, unless we really have to step in, we're not going to step in. And then you have San Francisco, where people take armloads of stolen goods in broad daylight walking out, and no one does anything. Then you have what we've had here in New York City, Clay, where, you know, people shooting up heroin in broad daylight on Broadway, which I saw myself in 2020, I would note. And I think also all the stats have to be put in the context of 2020 was the year of the lockdown. There were months where there should have been far fewer murders than homicides.
You're right.
And there were actually for a while. Yes. There's a big drop off. But the summer, this is what's so important, because they want to say, oh, it was the pandemic.
Caused by the pandemic.
They want to say that. But actually, the spike in homicides got going in June of 2020. What was the inciting incident? What was the difference all of a sudden in June? The rise of the BLM movement. The virus was actually in recession in June. Things were opening up. We all remember that. So don't let them get away with more lies. And I just would hope that there's accountability. I do think, Clay, with the 43% Biden support right now we see, which is really awful for a first-year presidency, the crime aspect of it, people have seen Democrats, look, they're just reckless on this issue. They will feed cops to the wolves to appease the mob, and communities suffer as a result.
And you're right about what we're going to see as this data gets more widely discussed. And I think people need to be prepared to push back against it. Is we had a skyrocketing crime rate that really only happened in about 6 months of the year. Because due to the shutdowns in March and April and May, the first 5 months or so of the year, the murder rate was not in any way poised to be up by historic margins. In fact, it was kind of, you know, right around average, and then it took off with the BLM movements, with the George Floyd. And by the way, I think this ties in as well with the fundamental lie that is being told here, where we got some videos that came out from inside of the Capitol on January 6th that they had been fighting to avoid the release of. You talked about the mostly peaceful protest with the fires going in the background and how much of a direct lie that was by CNN. The idea that we saw months of rioting, looting, violence all over America connected to BLM protest against police, and there was virtually no condemnation of it whatsoever. And then the one time when conservatives actually rioted, and by the way, they deserve to be punished for it like everybody who was rioting for months all throughout this country. But the difference between the way the media has covered it, we got one person shot in January 6th. Meanwhile, we got a 29% increase, the largest on record in recorded history by the FBI, and there was virtually no condemnation of it all. In fact,
shot,
we were told that it was mostly protest. Ashley Babbitt was totally
was a protester. Not somebody who was in law enforcement, as we know. And I've talked to so many people about that use of force incident. I still think that basically the double standard is at play, where because it's a Trump supporter, they act like shooting a woman in the neck from 15 or 20 feet away when she's at a door. And anyway, I still think that that was excessive force. But I've written about excessive force in other incidents that people barely even know about in places where, you know, there are times when cops actually step out of line. But the BLM narrative is very specific to what the facts of the case must be for everyone to get upset about it. I'd also say on the January 6th thing, by CNN standards, because there was a whole march and rally out there on the streets, had nothing to do with the Capitol.
Peaceful. Yeah,
didn't go there. By CNN standards, January 6th, a mostly peaceful
it's
protest.
Accurate.
There was,
that's right,
there was a riot, but it was mostly peaceful. All right. Well, look, I've got Margaret from Altamont, New York, writing him with just more and more of these customer testimonials, folks, from people that are giving Rough Greens a shot. She writes, both of our dogs loved Rough Greens from the very beginning. They finish everything and then lick their bowls clean. They seem to have more energy also. We're very impressed. Tallulah, the family Frenchie for the Sextons, she licks the bowl clean too, and she's got more energy with Rough Greens in her food. Dog food is dead food. As you know, there are no live nutrients in it. And dogs need live nutrition just like we do. Rough Greens is not a dog food. It is a healthy supplement that you add into your dog's existing food with all the live nutrients necessary for superior dog health. They've got live vitamins, probiotics, enzymes, omega oils, and antioxidants. No antibiotics, hormones, or fillers, by the way. The folks at Rough Greens are so confident you're going to love this for your dog, and your dog's going to be licking that bowl clean. They have a special deal for you, our listeners. Go to roughgreens.com/clayandbuck, and they'll give you the first bag free. You heard me right, free. All you pay is shipping. That's R-U-F-F, roughgreens.com/clayandbuck, roughgreens.com/clayandbuck.
Everything we told you about this is true. We knew it before it happened. We knew what was going to happen before because we know who these people are.
From the DNA of America's Anchorman, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton, inspired by Rush on the EIB Network.
We in the Department of Homeland Security, of course, with our partners across the federal government and state and local law enforcement, consider domestic violent extremism to be the most prominent terrorism-related threat to the homeland right now. I think our response in anticipation of what could have materialized on September 18th demonstrates the lessons learned from the January 6th insurrection.
Oh, there you go. So the DHS chief says that the massive overreaction and freak out and the putting up of fences. Welcome back to Clay and Buck Show, by the way. This is Buck. Mayorkas, they're saying, well, you know, September 18th, there were more reporters than there were right-wing protesters, whatever. I mean, they act like they're all domestic terrorists now, right? But people that show up who actually have a very legitimate gripe when they're talking at least about the holding of people in solitary confinement for months on end because some judges in D.C., some lib judge in D.C. decides that it is a threat of continued insurrection to let these people out. I mean, Clay, this narrative is very troubling that we have to keep hearing about the great threat to the homeland is essentially the Trump supporters who at any moment will overthrow the government and we have to be on constant guard, because that mentality then manifests itself in all kinds of surveillance expansion, in abuse by the DOJ and by the courts. These narratives have consequences, and it's really a political weapon. And that's what Mayorkas is getting at.
Well, and it's also trying to continue to shift the story from the disaster at the border, right? That these videos finally come out of the, as it was just described, insurrection, and you see what it actually was for the most part inside of the Capitol. It was people who are completely without threat. I mean, they look like people who are going to a march.
They're
who are
literally taking selfies inside the Capitol and smiling.
Walking in and taking pictures of themselves. If this were an insurrection, if this were a coup, it would be the first insurrection of all time that was attempted via selfie, right? I mean, I know technology advances, but most coups involve tanks, weapons, guns, military.
We're talking about moms and dads with selfies.
Yeah, live stream
and shame the Capitol Hill police into submission inside that building. I mean, when you see the video, and Clay, why isn't all that surveillance footage put online for anyone to see? If it's so terrible, we should see everything that happened. That's public record. That should not be held back.
No, I agree completely. And it would also allow, in theory, everybody to see what people actually did, which is why it needs to come out as a part of these criminal prosecutions, because juries, I think, need to see what actually took place there. In the meantime, I got to tell you, how about my friends at Pure Talk and how much money they're saving all of you out there in the larger marketplace listening to us? You can save $800 a year. That's a lot of money with the exact same cell phone towers, the exact same phone, the exact same phone number. All you have to do is dial #250 and say Pure Talk, and you get 50% off your first month. #250, say Pure Talk. We've done it. My own house has. My 13-year-old son dropped him off at school this morning. He's got his Pure Talk cell phone, first ever cell phone. He's so excited to have it. I know a lot of you may have kids. You think, hey, how can I make sure this and get hooked up right now? Dial #250. I trust these guys with my family. You should too. Save Pure Talk and save $800 a year. That's #250 and save Pure Talk. Do it today. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Hope all of you are having fantastic Thursdays. Encourage you to go download and subscribe to the podcast wherever you may be. We got 450 plus affiliate stations out there in all 50 states. We love all of you, but we also know you're out and about driving around working. You may not be able to hear every single minute. By the way, we should mention J.D. Vance, who is running for the Senate in Ohio and wrote the best-selling book, Hillbilly Elegy, which was also turned into a movie. He is scheduled to join us at 1:30 Eastern today. So you can go ahead and put that on your schedule as well. So we talked about the murder rate, 29% increase. We talked about the lies associated with January 6th. How about Joe Biden, who has a comment on everything, now being under fire for the collapse, the chaos at the border? In particular, it appears that most people right now in Del Rio, Texas, are originally from Haiti. And Joe Biden, well, he's not exactly been the biggest fan of Haiti's importance to the United States. This is from 1994. Let's listen to what Joe Biden thinks about Haiti and its impact on the United States.
A leading editor of a paper in the Delaware Valley asked their reporters to come down and talk to me and said, why is Biden so concerned about Bosnia and not about Haiti? Is it because blacks are involved in Haiti? Blacks are what at stake in Haiti, and in Bosnia they are Europeans, whites. There is major arsenals of nuclear weapons where they have long histories of national wars where ethnicity dominates. That is a phenomenal potential consequence of the United States. If Haiti, a god-awful thing to say, if Haiti just quietly sunk into the Caribbean or rose up 300 feet, it wouldn't matter a whole lot in terms of our interests.
That is Joe Biden. By the way, also in control of his mental faculties in 1994. Buck, isn't it kind of crazy to hear Biden in 94 compared to Biden in 2021?
Not entering senility, but stupid nonetheless.
Yes, not a smart.
Not a smart man. Never.
But that's 27 years ago now.
Can I just say, any Democrat who disagrees with that will have to contest with the fact that even Democrats until about 5 minutes ago would all say, Joe Biden, nice guy, not that smart. That was actually the consensus on Joe Biden. And yeah, look, what you see going on right now is what always happens when there's an immigration crisis with Democrats in charge. They find a way to turn it into essentially a human interest and emotion driven story. They will focus in on certain migrants and say, oh my gosh, look at the sadness in this person's eyes. And you're supposed to say, oh wow, okay, so I guess we should forget about what's actually happening at a macro level, what's going on with lawlessness. And why, I mean, if it's just people are sad and want to live in America instead of wherever they're from, why have an immigration system? I mean, you start getting back to very basic questions with all this. Bill Malugin, who's your colleague over at Fox, Clay, had some great reporting from yesterday. And this is what they don't want is people to know the numbers, because the numbers tell a story that's hard for Psaki to spin. The biggest set of numbers they don't want to give are how many have been let into the United States already. But I'm going to tell you, I think you'll find out that number Friday at about 4:45 p.m. Eastern time. I think that's when all of a sudden there'll be some DHS release. Oh, you know, no big deal. Right.
And by the way, this is just a fraction of the people that are actually getting in, right? These are the people that we're officially letting in.
This is one place on the border.
Yes.
I mean, I was speaking to a friend who is in Border Patrol in Rio Grande sector down near McAllen, and they still got people coming across, gotaways, the whole thing. This is just one area of the border, but the visual of what really does. And by the way, I've been in refugee camps. I've been in Syrian refugee camps on the Syria-Jordan border, so I know what they're like. What you're seeing on your TV screens when you have this Del Rio depiction, that's what a refugee camp looks like. It's makeshift. It's all thrown together. And the numbers, though, are really interesting. And again, from Malugin over at Fox, as of yesterday, they had 6,722 migrants, 4,742 family units, okay? 1,489 single adult men, 300 plus pregnant women.
Yeah.
Now this really matters, because when you break it down by segment, what you see are people who are very intentionally trying to game the immigration system, right?
That's right.
You have people
those
who are
300 people, you're born in America, you're an American
correct.
Citizen. Your
this
kids
is
are.
This, these are people who have said, I'm going to make sure that this is an anchor baby situation where I'm going to just go across the border right away. And by the way, other countries don't have this.
It's a
for
big
a
deal
reason.
That we don't talk about it.
You know,
yes.
you're it's not supposed to be, you know, if you go to visit France And, you know, your wife happens to have a baby in France. They have different rules about these things than we do here, where it's, what are your parents? Are your parents citizens? So we, and by the way, we have, for anyone who disagrees with this, there's a whole industry of birth tourism
yes.
in California in particular, where it's generally, but not entirely, a lot of Chinese nationals will pay to show up, have a baby in America, go back to China, and then as the child gets older, oh, here's my U.S. passport. Now I want to go to UCLA and, you know, live in America, right? So,
which, by the way, I don't begrudge anybody for taking advantage of our stupid system, right? Our system needs to change. Buck, if you were in China and you had the resources to get a kid double passport where you're a Chinese national and also an American national, I don't blame elites for trying to take advantage of this. We need, well, I don't think we should have birthright citizenship, right? If you look around the world, this is an extreme outlier that in the United States, if you cross over to our border and happen to have a child here, you don't become a citizen in the vast majority of countries in the world. I don't think most Americans know that. Like, right? Birthright yeah. citizenship is a pretty radical idea.
It is, and it actually hasn't really been, it's, The legal analysis of this, you get into, you have to get into it pretty deep and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And it's never really been directly addressed in a way that
nobody even wants to talk about it.
Nobody
it's like
wants
people
to talk
just
about
presume
it.
That it's, that but, it should, but go to Japan and try to have a baby and become a citizen. It's impossible.
And then, but so the 300 pregnant women, clearly that's have a baby in America as soon as possible. It's all paid for by the American taxpayer, of course. And then you have a U.S. citizen. The chance of you being deported with your new U.S. citizen baby is under any administration, quite honestly, zero. So, that's why you have 300 plus pregnant women as of yesterday. But let's go back to the family units, because here's the big thing. They keep saying, Clay, oh, the single adult men will be expelled under Title 42 authority, even though a federal judge has come in and said, oh, you can't do that. You're not allowed to
right.
do that. But they pretend that it's single adult males who will be sent back to country of origin. And this gets complicated, too, because if you're a Haitian national, but you're coming from Brazil, I guess they're going to send you back to Haiti, but you haven't been in Haiti in years anyway. The family units are where you're going to get lots and lots of people into the U.S. because of the existing rules. And actually, even when you talk to Border Patrol, they don't want to get into so much of what the rules are because they're being gamed in so many different ways. They don't want it to be even more clear. But family units, Clay, if you have anybody in that family who claims credible fear, the family unit cannot be separated, as we all know. The family unit is kept together. The whole family is essentially transferred into the United States, and they say, you know, you have a notice to appear at some point, maybe. That's it. It's the easiest thing in the world. And that's why we already had reporting this week that thousands of Haitian migrants, and also there's some Cubans and Venezuelans, but thousands of Haitian migrants have already been let into the United States.
And you're probably right that the numbers will probably come out Friday afternoon, right as we roll into the weekend, if they even have a tally of what the numbers actually are.
How could they not have? Just, can we just think about this for a second? How could they not have those
Because they
numbers?
Don't want to have a tally.
Yeah.
They don't want to have to tell us.
I give credit to Senator Ron Johnson we had earlier this week, because he asked in a hearing, and Mayorkas goes, you know, I'm working 16 hours a day or something, and I don't have that for you right now. Isn't that like the most important number they
yes.
could pay. Yeah, isn't that your job?
Yeah. What if you asked the CEO, hey, how are you trending on making or losing money? And he was like, I don't really know right now.
Yeah.
It's like, that's kind of the scoreboard for what
you do. I don't have a profit and loss statement for you, sir. We do other things here.
By the way, the Tunnels to Towers Foundation, at least we know that they're doing good work. Every day for this country, they do fantastic work. You learned about this great organization even before we took on the duties of hosting this show. And your generosity with this organization has been consistent for several years now. Tunnel to Towers feels a responsibility to let you know what they're doing with your contributions. This year alone, consider what they're accomplishing. 200 mortgage-free homes to America's heroes and their families. Also, Frank Sillerbuck, amazing job that he did there walking. Tell us about him.
He walked from the Pentagon to Shanksville to downtown Manhattan, helping all of us to remember and never forget the sacrifices of so many and their families. They're recognizing those we lost in the war on terror in a ceremony on Veterans Day. And between Thanksgiving and New Year's, they'll give away a home a day. That's incredible. A home a day, mortgage-free home, in their season of hope. Help Tunnel to Towers do good. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T. .org.
Humbled to walk in the footsteps of a legend, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.
What is your understanding of what transpired in the Oval Office yesterday when we were all in there trying to hear from the President and the Prime Minister?
Which aspect?
Well, the British Prime Minister in the American Oval Office called out British reporters, and then when American reporters tried to call on the American president, we were escorted out, let's put it that way.
Well, I think in that circumstance, and I think our relationship with the United Kingdom and with Prime Minister Johnson is so strong and abiding, we will be able to move forward beyond this. But he called on individuals from his press corps without alerting us to that intention in advance.
How dare he call on individuals in his press corps without alerting Saki Bomb in advance? I suppose that we're supposed to take that as a justification for shouting, not only shouting down reporters asking Joe Biden, the president, a question, Clay, but also interrupting Boris Johnson, who, say what you will, the guy does have a fancy accent, so at least it's fun to hear him sort of talk about all the things. And, you know, they're telling us he had to alert them beforehand. You'd think they could roll with things a little bit more in this Oval Office, except we know what's really going on here. Especially when there's a problem, Clay, that they're dealing with. When they know this border situation, all it takes is Joe Biden, remember the comment he made about Haiti sinking into the Caribbean a long time ago? All it takes is Joe Biden to say one really stupid thing, and Saki's got cleanup on aisle five for the next 3 days.
I love the, what did she say, which aspect? Like, it's just such a soft, like, can we play that, just the opening one more time of that clip? He asks her, she knows what the question is here. Hey, you shoved the entire White House press corps out during the Boris Johnson and Joe Biden media availability. Like, listen, this is just, I'm trying to think of who it reminds me of. It's like, she reminds me of, like, a really mean teacher who is, you know, just totally, you know, like the kind of person who back in the day, I don't know if they still paddle kids or not, would just kind of stand up there with the paddle in her hand, like kind of hitting it. Like, listen to this.
He asked a question. I think they're not supposed to paddle kids anymore, but
I, you know what? I think in the South, they still paddle kids.
Really?
When I was at, oh yeah, I think so. When I was in school, kids got paddled all the time down here. But listen, but you know what question he's asking. We just need to hear the open. And she says, it's kind of saucily and like disrespectfully and disdainfully. Which aspect? Listen to this.
What is your understanding of what transpired in the Oval Office yesterday when we were all in there trying to hear from the President and the Prime Minister?
Which aspect?
Well, oh, yeah. The British Prime Minister and the American...
Which aspect?
There's also a context here. And the context is this isn't the only time, even last week, when reporters whose job it is to be able to ask the president questions effectively. That's really the White House.
That's where they
job.
Get paid.
They do that. They ask the president. They ask Jen Psaki, maybe some other officials questions. That's what they do. And they keep having these handlers that are like, okay, everyone shut up, go. And everyone realizes that's a very weird thing to do to the press corps. And if, I mean, I know we have to point this stuff out, even though sometimes it feels like, you know, we're broken records on it. Could you imagine if the Trump administration, when there was a bad, you know, the Trump was having a bad week about the Russia collusion lies they told about him or something, right? But remember when that was, oh, Russia collusion. And someone asked Trump a question about that, and you had White House personnel under that administration shouting down reporters,
shoving them out of the room.
CNN had a reporter who lost his hard pass for a day, which meant that he'd have to actually give his ID and get signed in like everyone else who goes to the White House who's, you know, not given special privileges and access as a reporter. And it was like a national crisis. We were all supposed to be... you know, crying our eyes out about
it. The First Amendment was under siege when CNN had its credentialing questioned in any way during the Trump White House, when Psaki basically turns into a nose tackle along with the White House communications staff and bulldozes people completely out of the Oval Office because they can't respond to questions. And also, it just further elucidates to me the feeble nature of Joe Biden's leadership, that Boris Johnson is comfortable taking questions inside of the Oval Office from his own media, and our White House press corps is so terrified of Joe Biden taking questions that they bulldoze everybody out of the Oval Office so that Biden can't respond to any questions.
I mean, they're one bad Biden statement away from having to spend a few days convincing any of, look, there are some, as we always talk about, 30%, maybe 35%, maybe even 40% of the American people will be happy with the Joe Biden, although it is at 43% overall right now that approve of this. So, I mean, we're getting pretty close to 40.
That's the latest Gallup poll, 43%. Joe Biden, if I'm right about 40-40, you know, you have 40 who are going to support you no matter what you do, 40 who are going to hate you no matter what you do. Joe Biden basically has drained down to the only diehards who are still supporting him.
And so there's going to be this faction that no matter what he says, I mean, Joe Biden could walk out to the podium, you know, with nothing but a t-shirt on and his socks and his tidy whiteies. And there are members of the Democrat Party, the White House press corps, who would say, you know, it's just Joe being Joe, everybody. It's no big deal. You know, Joe could start.
It's refreshing to see the president like without the suit on. And,
yeah,
like,
I mean,
he
could wander
like
off stage muttering about how he has to go, feed the pigeons or something. And they would all be talking about how this is Joe Biden is a great leader who can show his human side. It doesn't matter what he does. But to people that are paying attention and can be persuaded that this was a really bad idea to foist this guy after the hiding in the basement presidential campaign on the American people, he's just one bad statement away from losing even more of them. And I think that means that, look, Jen Psaki's got quite a job here. You know, you say, You're Neo from the Matrix, you know, avoiding all this stuff all the time. You can imagine anybody who works in this White House has to be constantly maneuvering around the possibility of a Joe Biden flub.
Which aspect, Buck? When we come back to Dr. Fauci, the Fauchmeister has responded more to our request for an interview. We're going to have to bring in Dr. Buck Fauci to respond.
Oh, we got more on this one. And also, we have updates on the situation at our southern border. That's going to be coming up here in just a few. Stick around.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.